This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome to episode 357 of Indie Comic Book Noise. I'm your one of your hosts, Steve Raker, along with Andrew the LA Rabbit and our brothers from the border up north, Phil in Ottawa, and Whirlwind X Kevin somewhere near Toronto.
Where's my fancy name?
Otter?
No.
This is the totally independent podcast sponsored by nobody, but brought to you as part of and by the graces of the Deliberate Noise Network. And for more information, you can check out thedeliberatenoise.com. And we have a indiecomicbooknoise.com and a Facebook page also. Beyond that, we're the guys who do Marvel Noise. And this is our chance to talk about the indie books that we've been reading. Right, guys?
Right. You guys underrated Divinity and the new Casanova. I mean, like, come on. Teenage Music International?
Hey, you're assuming people listen to our other episodes.
No, I'm calling out our host so no one else listens.
Hey, this is our third consecutive weekly episode, as promised, roughly.
Phil must be happy.
I know, I'm so fucked up on scheduling right now. Sometimes we wait over a month, sometimes we do it every week. What the fuck's going on?
It's almost like it's dependent on how many indie comics we've been reading at any one particular given time.
I say let's do it every week.
Well, we know right, checks we can't cash, boys.
Hey, I said there'd be three weekly shows, and then we've delivered.
It's true.
I actually,
yeah, but I thought you meant they just weren't going to be strong shows when you said weekly.
Well, no, this is a good one.
Last time,
I got good books to share. I got good books.
Well, in the every podcast is someone's first follow up department. We recently spoke of the fabulous Only the Living Boy in the same creative team, you may recall, had the High Moon comic from Zuda back in the day, and that's now being released, so you can go to highmooncomic.com and read it for free on the interwebs. And High Moon is a werewolf slash western, so not necessarily out of place for the recent, we also discussed Dave Wachter's Guns of Shadow Valley. I would say, while the art is, you know, Steve Ellis and not Dave Wachter, not a dissimilar idea of supernatural and Western or superpowers and Western meeting up. And it was their award-winning thing, and it's now being serialized for free. So, highmooncomic.com.
And speaking of supernatural Western mashups, I caught one because both the name and the cover image struck me as something that I might want to check this out. And that is from Working Class Press. A fellow named James Guy Hill has written and drawn and colored The Dead Don't Die. And this number one I found on Comixology. It's like landscape digital. And it's a Wild West and zombie mashup taking place like right after, I guess, would be the Civil War, like in the late 1800s. It's really cool. It follows a mysterious kind of badass gunfighting stranger on his journey, at least as he's saying, to find and kill his brother. And along the way in this episode, he encounters, you know, some zombie living dead walking around, that, you know, the typical moanings, lumbering in groups kind of zombies. And he's trying to take them out and deal with them and makes his escape. Then he comes upon a town and he's trying to gain info and practically takes apart this whole town while he's trying to get info on his brother. The art's all really pretty indie. It's almost like Jim Mahfood type indie. But it's real smooth in its presentation, and the landscape style of the, made for digital really, you know, enhances the artwork, I think. And some of the, and I use this for lack of a better descriptive word, is sort of the simplicity of the artwork, or at least the contrast of the shapes of the artwork against the backgrounds. The color palette is really deserty and really pleasing. A lot of shades of sandy browns and some red and black thrown in because the mysterious stranger wears black, and you're going to see a lot of red if you're going to see some bloodshed. But definitely check it out. It is cool. There's text piece in the back that's like an editorial explanation of what he's trying to do here. And I don't have a sense of the scope of the project, if this is going to be a limited series or an ongoing or what he's doing. But he's talking about doing some deep characterization and just kind of playing off the fact that there's this supernatural angle, but not being reliant on it and having it literally be more of an eye-catching hook. Having the zombies in it at all. So it was really enjoyable and made me want to continue to follow this stranger on his quest and see where it takes him next.
He doesn't team up with Zeke Deadwood?
It's my new Zeke Deadwood, Kevin. There you go. Zombies and supernatural Wild West. What do you got, Kevin? Do me one better.
I'll go real indie. You guys read any Sad Man by the 11 O'Clock Comics own forum guy, Dave Jordan?
Occasionally I see that strip on the 11 O'Clock Comic forums, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's gotten inside my head and everything. It's like burrowing in there.
Are you a sad man?
It must like match with my sensibilities and like reminds me of my own stuff and thinkings or something. And then he has some other stuff on his website there, DaveJordanArts.com, like Eel Wife and a few other things. I think one of them's like maybe like a, if it was a 24-hour thing, you know, that type of length, speed type of, I don't know, those things don't seem to be that dense, and this one is only like, not a gag strip, but it's usually only a few panels, where like Sad Man's dealing with like a few, maybe some everyday deals, like he'll be ordering something from the internet, or he'll be struggling with Cthulhu, or dealing with an existential angster, or something. I don't know. It's always fun trying to see him, like, succeed at whatever he's doing, like, trying to stop a bank robber, and then he gets shot. I don't know. I like, it doesn't sound funny, like, some of this stuff, but I was just like, I sort of joked, Sad Man, more like, Funny Man. It's a bit of both. Like, it's funny, and then it ends up being sad, and you're like, oh, that didn't work out so well for him. It's kind of both. I don't know. I start thinking about things. That's what's good when you see something like that. Because in the latest one, the hero's, like, disappearing, and, like, pieces of him are like, as each panel goes on, like, you're not seeing pieces. So it's like, at one point, you only see, like, two eyeballs and, like, a mask. But it's almost like they could have been planets or something. Almost like a Dr. Manhattan thing is going on. So I started thinking of, like, atomic-based characters and all that. And you know, it's almost like that SNL update with, like, Harry Carey and Weekend Update with Norm MacDonald. And Harry Carey's going, like, if you're a hot dog, will you eat yourself? Don't screw around with me, Norm. I'd be delicious. I'd totally eat myself. So I started thinking about him disappearing into the panel like that. Well, he doesn't have ears, or if you couldn't hear, you know, like would you still want ears? You know, you get into that crazy mind space that I think about sometimes, which is kind of crazy, but I enjoyed. Good stuff.
Sad Man. I just like to say it.
Yeah. Well, I guess he was. I think the story was he was typing in Sandman into a search engine, but then he typed in Sad Man instead.
And he got a picture of himself came up. And then he had to go create.
Yes. Well, that's how it is, isn't it? It seems like, especially like in the olden days, people just sort of like ran into inventions all the time. Or like you'd be, oh, we broke the stereo, but now it works better. Like, I don't know.
Phil, what have you been reading?
Well, I read this. IDW has this new imprint where it's people doing comics for the first time called the Comics Experience. Did you guys see any of that yet?
I don't think so, no.
Podcast?
I don't think I have either.
Go on.
Oh, I was just thinking, wasn't that... I thought that was like on like the iFanboy like feed as a podcast at like one point in time, the Comic Experience. you know, before they dialed everything back on their website.
Maybe this is a Canadian thing.
Maybe.
But, yeah, so basically it's just new people hitting the comic scene for the first time. And I think this is the first one. I could be wrong. But when you look at the cover, like, you know when you get, like, a comic with a product, like at a grocery store or something, you know, and sometimes, like, they used to back in the day come with comics, like, it has that cheesy, stupid look. Well, the design of, like, the logo and everything's kind of like that. So it's not very impressive looking at the start. At the front cover, and basically what it is, it's called Creature Cops Special Varmint Unit, and it's about as if they started mixing animals together, and now it's just part of life. So you have like half rhino, half dog type things, like anything you can imagine. So this is a cop unit that handles all that stuff, and it's just like that show Cops, where basically it jumps scene to scene, them doing something different with some type of...
This has potential, Phil. This has potential.
You think so. You'd think so. Because I was very excited for this when I saw the cover long ago. But the writing isn't very good. It's kind of boring and cliche. And the writer seems too proud of his creation of panda dogs and just likes to mention it every second he can.
This sounds like something I've watched as a cartoon recently.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, Top 10. You guys ever read that?
No.
Yep.
I did.
It's very much, take maybe like 0.23% of that, and that's what this is trying to be. Like, it's that much of Top 10. Like, it's very much like that, but just
it's
nothing even close.
It's 2 or 3/10 of a percent of Top 10.
Top 10 had some pretty big names on, who was the, was it Gene, huh?
Yeah.
And, but it's his first comic, so.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'm going to give it another chance, and, or maybe see what he does afterwards, but it's very amateurish.
Yeah, I don't think you want to judge a lot of people by their first comic.
No, not at all, so.
Everybody's somebody's first.
What do you got, Andrew?
Well, if we're talking IDW spinoffs, I might as well go to... I mentioned when I was at the Pasadena Comic and Toy Show, one of the only publishers there was Darby Pop, who's an imprint of IDW. And the guy working there also had his comic company, Stranger Comics. And so they had a bunch of titles, so I picked up Dusu. That's how I'm pronouncing it, D-U-S-U. Path of the Ancient, one of four. I think they had all four finished at the time. And this one's a whole village of... Writer Sebastian Jones, Christopher Garner, artist James Webster, layouts Daryl May, cover Hyung Tak Nam, letterer Joshua Kozine, you know, like a full boat. And I sent you guys some photos around because this has what I would call that kind of digital painting kind of style. It reminds me of like video game concept art type of thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem like a fair description? Do you guys remember the image I sent around?
I don't think I ever saw it.
It was that double page spread, but my scanner won't do a full double page. So,
so
it's more like 3/4 of a double page.
Yeah, I don't know if I would think like video game like right away.
So it's I would say, in a way, very professional looking, like you would think this would be gracing along any other comic. The thing is, that stuff, while it's kind of pretty, it isn't always to my liking in a way. I don't know why. It just, it works, but it doesn't speak to me the way other art styles do. What I do like is in the beginning of the story, kind of the panels are sort of interweaved with, it sets, a lot of it's in a forest, so the panel borders are like vines and branches and things like that. Whereas it gets later on in the story, the panels become more defined, which I thought was kind of an interesting artistic choices as we get out of the past, kind of. But it's set in this fantasy world. Oh, and they have like text in the back to explain it, and it's really good. It's really big world building. So it's this world that has all these different types of elves, and this one tribe of elves, who normally doesn't truck with humans, as you might imagine, finds a human baby, and the guy sees a sign that says he should keep the baby and raise him. And you know, there's always that conflict between the human and, you know, the outsider orphan adopted in the native ones because he doesn't have the same superpowers and everything. So the opening hunt they're on just demonstrates those differences, and now he's not really accepted by the full tribe. You know, nothing breaking the mold here, but still classic storytelling. And what happens was the human has these visions, and then through the course of it, you realize they're at war with the humans traditionally, and this group of raiders come that are looking very Viking-like, and they just rut, the elves just rip into them with their spears and their clubs and just tear them all apart. So it's very, if you like fantasy and you like that kind of art style, I think this would be up your alley from that regard. I'm, like I said, I can't fault the art, but it doesn't really do. It's going to remind me in some ways of a book we're going to talk about later on, Steve and I, but a more painted style. But it's Dusu, Path of the Ancient from Stranger Comics.
Cool.
Related to IDW, but the guy that works for Darby Pop owns this print publisher.
I found another book on Comixology basically because of the cover, which is a large face sort of regurgitating or vomiting up a whole bunch of, looks like magic texts and knives and artifacts, and like there's like a frog and a bone and a skull and eyeballs and statues and flasks and gold coins and other treasures. It looks like a lot of things that might go into spell mixing or something along those lines, and I was like, I should check this out. That looks pretty cool. It's called Basilius.
So this is a note to Comixology people. Have your cover with someone regurgitating something. Steve will be like, oh!
Yeah, if the regurgitation is drawn really detailed. None of these washes.
But yeah, I noticed it too, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
And the face on the cover even obscures its own title, you know, not giving itself, you know, that extra promotion that you'd think a new comic would need. But no, the regurgitating all these items is enough. It doesn't even need a title. But it has one, and it's Basilius, and it's Basileus, BasiliusComic.com. You can find it because it was a webcomic, and it seems to be ongoing in that format. But I would like to support this artist by getting the chunk and having it as part of the whole Comixology experience. So the first issue is new out on Comixology. It's by Andrew White, W-H-Y-T-E. And the first issue is entitled Thieves and Murderers. And like I've described the artifacts on the cover, the line work and the colors are really done fantastically. A lot of detail, but the forms underneath a lot of the sharp line work hold true to a lot of good human forms. There's a few exaggerations and stuff. It's art, but overall, I mean, it just it didn't feel like a first outing from an artist at all to me, which is really fun. It almost seems like maybe one of his heroes is like a Jeff Darrow type because of the way that he drew some of the backgrounds and scenery and landscapes. It's a feudal age story that opens with a rich, pompous dude in a caravan with like slaves carrying him in this like big wooden shack on on horizontal bars that the guys are carrying. And he's going through the woods, and in this caravan gets ambushed by these poor townsfolk who have basically turned into aspiring bandits. It isn't clearly said here. I'm sure it'll get more into it, but it seems like maybe there was an empire that's now broken up. Everyone seems to be like mercenaries. It seems like towns might be very different from each other as a result of like some sort of destabilization, because they comment like that these woods used to be really safe and now the rules have changed, and now the one safe woods has bandits in it, etc. And there's this great battle scene of the bandits attacking the caravan. Like a sorcerer comes out and turns this guy inside out, which is totally wild, and sorcerer gets killed in the ambush, and one of the two guys who escapes is the guy who killed a sorcerer, and somehow this sorcerer left a mark on one of the guys, and that's kind of how the first installment ends. It's got humor, it's got cursing, Sometimes the cursing is related to the humor, but the pacing and the art, there's a really interesting depth of dialogue too. Like when the people start talking, I'm really drawn in. They're like talking about like other stuff that it seems as if the writer is taking an opportunity to speak through this character. You know, the way that the big pompous guy describes going through the woods and how they're the woods of his childhood, and you know, each of the thousand leaves that he sees, it's too many to count, even though there's a finite amount, and he's kind of contemplating that. And I guess maybe that's it. The characters contemplate stuff, and it makes you think yourself. And again, it just doesn't seem like a first-time installment. This guy has something to say here, and his art, you know, borders on psychedelic, even though he's drawing, you know, knights with swords cleaving open villagers and stuff. It all feels very historical, and it's a really fun read. I could only hope that this guy can crank them out, because it was a very enjoyable experience. I'll definitely be supporting him, even though he offers it for free on his website there, basiliuscomic.com. I'm going to be buying him through Comixology just to throw him a few bucks.
Yeah, I happened to look him up, and I thought TCAF or something like that came up, so I was like, oh, maybe I'll be buying something in the future. Physical stuff. We'll see.
Well, you got the floor, Kevin.
Regale
us with another one.
I think this is the infamous one that set Andrew off, but I'm not sure. You know, when I get into the whole, or maybe it sets Phil off when I get into the whole Japanese stuff.
Oh, boy.
Batman. We told you, Kevin, you can't review Batman on this show.
Even if it's
why not? You mean with Dr. Death and everything? That's
a good loophole.
I don't think that was put out by the distinguished competition. I think that actually had official publisher the manga Batman. But anyhow, I digress.
You?
I think I brought up this Master Keaton before with the whole gloss globe on the cover, oversized presentation, really nice stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to give this a look. Because you wouldn't think this would be that interesting from the description. Because it's like, it's about an insurance investigator. And you're like, oh great. Oh, but this dude is the son of a Japanese zoologist and an English noblewoman. He also knows a bit about archaeology, and he's a former member of the SAS. Interesting.
And how did he end up selling insurance or investigating insurance?
I've never heard it pronounced out. I've always just heard it by the letters before, but I guess it would be the SAS.
I thought it would be funnier that way, wouldn't it? I don't know. Humor is what we're always going for right here. We're mainly a comedic podcast now, right?
At least in laughing to each other, sure.
Oh, okay.
And ratings.
Maybe people laugh at us, too. Hey, you know what I'm talking about.
No, it's just
you,
Kevin.
All the time, Kevin.
Exactly.
Okay, there we go.
All right, keep doing that Japanese dance you do. So
yes,
you can laugh.
Yes. But, yeah... Like, this isn't a long-form story. You know, you think of these types of things like, oh, it's going to be a 60-volume affair. And I kind of wondered, like, oh, is this just going to be, like, one long story, at least one story per volume. And it's amazingly, like, short stories that are, like, sort of done in one. But it's like...
Did you say what it was called?
Master Keaton. But it sort of has themes going through it. Or, like, supporting characters, but not really a whole lot of continuing things. So they can just jump from adventure to adventure. Because he has a daughter that sort of, like sort of talks to him and says, oh, you're an underachiever and everything, compared, you know, to his ex-wife and everything.
Well, I don't know if he gave the credits, though, Kevin, even though he gave...
Oh, do you want me to mangle the credits?
Yep.
Well, I mean, shouldn't you say who did it?
Well, the reason I picked up it was because it was by Urasawa, which did Pluto and 20th Century Boys and some other stuff. But I think he's only doing the artwork here. It's not exactly 100% clear.
But what ends up being like the conflict for him? Like, what's the challenge? What's the quest? What's the angle?
I'll get to it. So he's doesn't seem like he could make as much money as he could or do as much as he could. And he's kind of bumbling, like maybe like an Inspector Clouseau or, you know, that type of thing. You're like, oh, he's not, you know, and he sort of absentmindedly takes things from people. And he's like a part-time teacher and everything. But when he does this insurance investigator stuff, he like sort of gets involved in like these horrible things, like either art forgeries or like the mob, or he like runs into someone and he's like, oh yeah, I feel like I need to help out here. So it's pretty interesting how he like gets into these things and like people are trying to kill him or like clients of his. And then he needs to survive, and he's like an expert in survivalism. Like he taught people how to survive, so he's kind of like the MacGyver Indiana Jones. But I'm thinking, what's a modern day MacGyver like? Do we have a modern day MacGyver? Mm-hmm. Like, what's a more modern reference?
Well, now wouldn't it be someone like Bear Grylls or these survivalists that they throw? You know, they got all those TV shows that they throw some dude in the woods with a penknife, and he's got a.
Like Survivor Man and everything. I was thinking of something like a movie like Jason Bourne, but that's like too spy. I don't know. Anyways, yeah, he's a survival guy. So like he'll end up like in the Middle East or something with these people. And they'll be like, they'll get like offend someone. They'll be stuck out in the desert. And they like need to survive for like many days. But he knows how to survive. So they'll be like digging a trench so they can cause shade to fall on them during the days so they don't bake there in the desert. So
does it feel like one of those ones where they've actually researched, you know, it's like real stuff, or is it just made up stuff?
It seems real stuff, yeah. Like it's like it could be something where
what?
Like someone was interested in that stuff and they're like, oh, how can I bake this into a story? But it actually really makes sense for the stories. Like he introduces math to like figure out other problems. And like I mentioned, like he steals someone's tape. So like 30 or 50 pages from now, when he breaks out that tape and MacGyvers something up, you know where that tape came from. And you know, oh yeah, this makes sense. This guy can do this with what he has. But the last story, it gets all serious where he like has to take down like one of his students type of thing. And you find out like how much ability he actually has and if he's going to be able to pull it off. But there's another four volumes of this, so I think this is pretty cool. Certainly fits into a certain niche. Mm-hmm. And isn't, you know, like a Naruto or a One Piece. Like, this is more of a realistic type of thing. And I almost would think that it's a modern-day thing, but I think this came out, like, late 80s. Because I don't know. I don't know if this is a thing, but even if someone doesn't use a cell phone or the internet, like I don't really notice. Like, oh, they should be using a cell phone. Like I notice it sometimes on TV shows, but with comics, maybe when I read through all these different eras, I'm not conditioned to automatically think that. But yeah, some historical events or stuff comes up in here, and you're like, oh yeah, this is definitely of a different era. Very cool.
There could still be a new book. You know, sometimes they throw them. They play around sometimes at the time, though. You know what I mean? Or they want some event to happen as a backdrop.
Yeah, but there's nothing like super jarring, like oh, that guy would totally take out his phone camera and then do that. Like I was never thinking of that, but sometimes that happens with like something like the X-Files. Like, oh, this is the only copy of that alien photo we have, and then you know, if they would have had something nowadays, you'd be like, oh yeah, they would have. Put that on the internet or whatever.
So they don't make conspicuous pop culture references like, man, did you see that Austin Powers movie? Yeah, baby, type of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing like that in here. But, like, the thing that gets you is, like, they'll talk about, like, the Soviet Union or something, and then they'll be like, oh, yeah, okay. But but otherwise, you know, very nice book. Looking forward to more.
Phil.
Yes?
Did you read your homework?
I got better news for you, Steve. What's Uh-oh. Your favorite thing in the world to do? Write long podcast descriptions, correct? It's time to run the gauntlet.
Uh-oh.
So first up is The Living Dead by Hickman by Image Comics. I'm not a big fan of Hickman's Image stuff. Usually I think it's beautiful, really well written, but I just find it very boring. And once again, same thing. This is a great, good story, but I just find it boring for myself. But worth picking up if you're a Hickman fan. Two is Devil's Due Event, Squarriors, number one. I don't know how people are not talking about this comic.
Is it about squirrels?
It's about squirrels, like Games of Thrones-type squirrel things. Like, the cover has a beautiful cover of a squirrel just with an axe and another squirrel on the ground with his stomach gutted open. Just beautiful. In the comic, it's fun. Just the concept alone, I don't know, I'm having fun with it. It's like that mouse, those mouse ones, you know?
Mouse guard?
Yeah. And except this is pretty violent.
Or Mice Templar?
Yes, that's the one I liked.
Not like Mouse.
Oh, yeah, there's so many. Definitely not like that.
Okay.
That's for
You're
sure.
Like, I like that mouse one? I'm like, ooh, this could get dark.
I always wonder how people pick up the first volume of that and they don't pick up the second. I don't know. Maybe the first one just like, that was too much.
Yeah. And then next is Cross 2014 special. This is by Justin Jordan, who we talk about quite a bit on the show. And basically this story is the infection taking place during jail, which is why I picked it up, because I love jail stories for some reason, or jail movies. And so it's just fun. For me, it was a lot of fun, just on that alone. Then by Dynamite, we have Army of Darkness by Cullen Bunn. The cover is beautiful. It's, you know, like the ET shot where where they're like in the silhouette of the moon and all that junk?
Sure.
This is the car with a shotgun sticking out by the moon and everything. Just a really nice cover. And this one takes place in space. He's fighting the Deadites.
What?
Yep.
Is this a new series?
This is a new series, yeah.
So is that the number one then?
That's number one, yeah, and I think they have three issues so far, if I'm correct.
Oh, cool. Cullen Bunn's writing it. That's interesting.
Yeah, and it's fun. And in space, it's the first time he's been in space, so it's
a
lot of fun.
And he teams up with E.T.?
Nope. Nope, I wish, but nope.
The Muppets? I've
always loved the horror movies where they do that cheesy, like, Jason in space, you know, things like that, or Leprechaun in space. I don't know why, I like that kind of thing.
You saw Yojimbo in space?
That's my favorite. I love that comic. Usagi Yojimbo. Space Usagi. I love that comic. And next
nice
up...
guy. Dan Sakai.
Yeah, I just saw him at the Long Beach. They had a little... and he talked about that. He talked about when Godzilla came... Or War of the Worlds. Martians came and they fought the big mecha Usagi. he's doing a Charlie Brown thing, so he drew a little Charlie Brown.
Oh, cool. Next up by Boom is Escape from New York, which takes place after the first movie, I believe, because, let's face it, the second movie is pretty pretty bad. If you rewatch it, it's unwatchable.
Well, it was like 2 decades later, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I really wanted to like this comic, but I don't know. I can't get into it. It's very boring. Very text-heavy, which usually I'm okay with, but it's just, yeah, it's not very good. And then, there's more, Steve, don't worry. And then there's, I'll skip that one, actually. I'll save you on that one.
What?
Then there's...
He's making changes on the fly.
You can have another turn. You don't have to shoot your wad now, man.
Actually, yeah, okay, I'll save some.
All right, Andrew, then we're up here with finally reading a little Van Lente Conan.
Conan, the People of the Black Circle, Ariel Olivetti on the art chores.
Yeah, Van Lente's writing the current ongoing Conan the Avenger series, but that wasn't the first time he wrote Conan, because in 2013 he did this 4-issue series, and it's great. I mean, it's a better-than-average Conan formulaic type story, which is perfect for the genre and for Conan. And the art I found, you know, it's Ariel Olivetti, and it's not him racing through it or anything. I thought it was really care was put into it, even though it's, you know, very that painted style that it just pulls you into its own world. Once you accept the world and you're in it, it seems like it's taking you someplace foreign. And that, too, works for Conan.
Yeah, it reminds me of computers really lots. Like, sometimes characters would be, like, floating in previous work that was kind of off-putting to me.
Well, I gotta, I mean, if you don't like formula, you're probably not gonna like Conan. I mean, I love Conan, but let's be fair. Like, a lot of the great stories are kind of that pattern. Like, he has a few.
Well, no story has like a wizard gorilla in it fighting Conan.
And the magic is always bad. Yeah. And he always falls in with a bunch of groups who are going to betray him. And there's always a girl involved. I mean, you know, it's just that's what you're going to Conan for. You're not going to Conan for, you know, his treatise.
There's also the politics of the time, too, and of the world that Robert E. Howard created. I think Van Lente exploits really nicely here. At this time, the king of Vendaya is dying, and the king's trusted sister, Yasmina, is, like, caring for him at his side and everything. And this guy, Karim Shah, is to blame. And he's from Turan, but he's really a Hyrcanian. He's using his sorcerer to kill the king, this guy Kemsa, and he's one of the black seers of Mount Yimsha. And after the king dies, the sister is out for revenge. She wants the heads of the black seers of Mount Yimsha and to find out why they would have, you know, taken out her brother. At the same time, Conan is a chieftain of, like you said, Andrew, some kick-ass tribe. Seven of the head guys in that tribe are being held captive by the dead king's sister, who's now the regent. And the price for their release? It's the heads of the black seers of Mount Yimsha.
Of course.
And instead of accepting the deal, as a typical Conan story might go, he goes the other way, and he kidnaps the princess and takes her into the hills, and Hyborian Age hijinks ensue.
They bang.
They meet ninja-like Wazuli raiders.
What that?
He's got Karim Shah on their tails. A chick is manipulating Kemsa to betray his masters. And ultimately, they make a raid on Mount Yimsha itself to face the Black Seers. So it all goes down. All the things that are mentioned are then explored and discovered. There's swords, there's sorcery, there's sandals, there's sand. It's all good.
Yeah, there's a giant snake, which seems appropriate for Conan. And I know, I'm pretty sure we all enjoyed the colorful sound effects that remark the Incredible Hercules that Pack and Van Lente wrote. And here there was one, when he pulls his sword out of the snake, it goes schlork. Which I thought sounds like a perfect description of what it would probably sound like, pulling a broadsword out of a giant snake.
I like when comics do that.
But it's a nice, solid 4-issue Conan story, and it just reminds me again of how much I love the character and am really looking forward to diving into the Conan the Avenger series, which now has probably close to 10 issues under its belt, right? So I'm going to check those out, and then I'll share them with you.
Yeah, and I went the hardcover route, and it was, cover price $19.99, but most places you can get that discounted. And it's a nice little hardcover. I do agree with you guys. I like the art, although this generally isn't the style that attracts my eye, but I thought it worked here. But for some of us, you're always going to have a hard time giving me a Conan that's not Buscema-esque, and that's my own problem.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, it's a Conan I'm used to reading a lot and a lot and a lot of. And even if it wasn't him, it was someone aping him, it seemed like.
My mother used to love reading the Conan Savage Swords in the comics when I would have them. And if Buscema wasn't drawing him, she usually didn't like it because she's like, no, I like it when he's like kind of handsome Conan.
Jeez.
But here I thought, well, how about even for the digital painterly look of Olivetti, he goes out of his way to give Conan some really not stiff, appropriate facial expressions when he's like, you know, ribbing somebody and he's like laughing, and you can tell he's got the, and dare I say it, the mirth and merriment that Robert E. Howard infused into the character in print. And Olivetti captures it.
Yeah, and the as Kevin pointed out, the different elements interact well. Sometimes in this kind of look, it can look like things are floating or they're not. They're just placed like two objects in a field almost. Where here it looks like they're the different, you know, the swords just seem to be going through something of substance or out of it and everything. But at the end of the day, I thought it worked in this story well, but I'm still not, you know, I still prefer other art styles, I guess, when push comes to shove. Nice little hardcover you can pick up on the cheap.
Yeah, it was good.
I want to cut off Andrew.
He's been waiting for me to read it for so long, and I finally read it. Now I'm like, now I wanted to read nothing but Conan. I listened to Conan and Frank, or I read Conan and I listened to Frank Zappa at the same time. And I was like, I have to do this more. You know, it's a crazy thing to think, and I think it's accurate for me, is that if I could only have, like, one character's comics, like history of comics, to like have forever to kind of be able to reread the old Trapped on an Island, that kind of a thing, I think it would be Conan. Like all the different iterations and the old Marvel series, the good stuff that Dark Horse did. There's been a lot of fantastic Conan art and stories, and I just so love him as a vehicle for telling those tales. He's just such a great character, and he gets into such good adventures, and I really love the Hyborian Age.
Wow. I mean, there's certainly enough content that, you know, if you got all the different titles, but I don't know. I wonder what I would be kind of, you'd want to go for something that's got breadth, like, I don't know, I'd like bring, all Star Wars comics or...
I'd bring heavy metal so that way I have something to jerk off to also.
But I just mean if I could read, like, I could spend a lifetime reading Conan stories and feel very satiated, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know what I would. Yeah, because it would be an indie thing, so I'd be like,
You're about to get stuck on an island. Choose.
I guess I'd probably pick Spider-Man because there's just so much of it.
You have to go content. That's why. Yeah, Conan's a good choice for that.
I've already used that once this week.
Give us one more, Kevin.
One more. I have two more.
All right, give
us two.
Maybe
three more.
Pull a fill on us.
Yeah, I got to give some shout outs to some great books. I read too much. Well, you can't really read too much stuff, but you know, I got to get some Valiant in there when I can because it's just incredible how good the Valiant series is. Like it's up to issue 3 or 4 now with Jeff Lemire, Matt Kent. Paulo Rivera, Joe Rivera.
The woman that can talk to plants?
Plants?
Isn't that what she does?
No. Well, I suppose she could talk to plants since she's a geomancer, but... there's a funny bit in here, actually, where she says to Bloodshot, it will explain what you are. And then he's like, well, explain what you are. And then they're kind of like, oh, yeah. Like, they're... They're not extremely easy concepts to explain.
Bloodshot's jumped to my new favorite Valiant character.
Really?
Since I've read some more, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's up
he's
there.
He's badass. He's badass.
Yeah. And he, like, gets really... Like, I wouldn't say I'm the guy that would be like, oh, yeah, I love really violent comics, but when it involves Bloodshot, it's usually good when he's being run through a meat grinder or something.
Oh, yeah, when he's stuck in a tough position or something on his own.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. Or he's eating a cow.
Mm-hmm.
But I think last time we left the Valiant off because we covered the first issue. It was like the mortal enemy was sort of coming around and he's just continued walking through like the Valiant universe and just wrecking everyone. And there's just like so many good character moments through all these things. Like in the second issue, they had one with Ninjak where he was like all silent in the snow. And you didn't know he was there. It was just like those crazy, I guess, stories you hear about those like mercenary soldier types where they're just like in their environment for like days until they need to come out. And this one's much like it. But the thing that amazes me here too is it has all the cool stuff like you want in a big universe event book. They have a splash here, a double page spread with. Well, like all the characters, like virtually all the characters, except for a few of them that are away for story reasons. Either their story was done or they wouldn't be here. But it reminds me of like other big events where you would just have like everyone in a room and like someone's talking to them, okay, this is what we're gonna do, guys, and then they all head out to face off against this horrible evil, and then they all get taken down and they have to face like some kind of horrible fear or something. And it's just like the most imaginative stuff. Like, it's not just, oh yeah, we're like, this guy's sad about his mother or whatever. Like, like Armstrong is, it looks like he's regurgitating stuff. Like, he's been drinking too much. But he's like this weird, like, head with arms and legs. Or he might be shoving the vomit back into his mouth. Like, it's really weird. So, or, like, Quantum and Woody, like, the goat is here. Because they have a goat with them that, like, shoots beams out of his eyes. And, like, the goat is, like, killing Quantum and Woody. And that's what they're, like, really
scared
of.
He's my favorite character.
Yeah. So just, like, really messed up stuff is happening. I'm like, yeah, the immortal enemy is pretty much just wiping the floor with everyone. So he's, like, going after Bloodshot and the Geomancer. But they have this really cool sequence in the issue because they decide to hold up in a mall. Because I'm thinking zombie movie, you know. Where do you go? Like, oh, they have no forts around or anything. So they're like, oh, well, a mall is a good place to hide
out.
And
one zombie movie where it took place in a mall.
And it was awesome.
You can't say that's a cliche thing.
It is.
Well, at that time, there was only like four
zombie
movies.
And they were in malls. but anyways, yeah. They go through this thing where they're walking through the different areas in this department store. And it's like the different stages of life. It's like if they were like in an alternate reality, like you could see the Geomancer and Bloodshot. Like if they were in a relationship together, like they would go through all this stuff. It's just like a lot of cool background stuff. And like Rivero is so expressive with these characters. Like it's just unreal. Like I'm like feeling everything and I'm like these expressions. I'm like, this is so good. I'm like, he's like the perfect artist for this book. And then there's something really, I don't want to spoil it, but something really important happens with Bloodshot here. Like the Geomancer does something to Bloodshot and you're like, oh.
Oh, they,
and you just know this is going to play off for like when he gets his own series in a couple of months again. Like, it seems like it would be like really important or something that's going to really matter. I'm just amazed. So I'm really looking forward to this whole thing concluding. And they have a lot of cool process stuff in the back as usual with the layouts, the pencils, the inks, and the colors. So you can see how it all comes together.
As long as it's better than Armor Hunters, I'll be happy.
Yeah, it'll be better than Armor Hunters, guarantee you. I guarantee you it will.
All right, Phil, bring us home. What'd you save?
All right. Don't worry, I added some. Just joking. So first up by Xenoscope. This is the first. I know you guys joke around that I love that company and everything, but I haven't read their comics in a few years. I love the first bit where it was like every issue was a grim fairy tale, but then it completely changed.
Wait, but I sent you it. You didn't read the one I sent?
Oh, no, I read that. Yeah, yeah. So I shouldn't say in 3 years, but I mean like followed everything because I used to buy everything they put out almost and read it all monthly and stuff and bought it in trade. But now I just pick up a bit here and there. And so this one's Tale from Oz. And so basically it's just the origin stories of some of the characters. And this is pretty pathetic because it's the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion. And they have the exact same story. Like, it's such a joke. I have the main series, too, but I don't even know if I want to read it now. Next up is Gail Simone's Red Sonja, which I know Steve read. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. That was... I really enjoyed it. I think she does a great job with Red Sonja. And I've only read the first trade, but that's definitely a series I'll be jumping on for more. The Nameless by Grant Morrison, his new Image comic. I don't know what I read. Pigeons from Hell by Dark Horse. That's one Andrew read, I believe.
Yep, I like more Robert E. Howard.
Yeah, and it's beautiful art, really cool story. I'd say a must get. And then last off is The Strain, which is a TV show and a book, as everyone knows. I read the first two volumes of that, and I haven't read the books. I've seen maybe two episodes of the TV show. But I know a lot of people say the comic's the worst version of it, but I thought it was kind of cool. I don't know. I picked up the other ones they have out so far, and I'll be reading it all. And that's it.
All right. Oh, you know what I just reread yesterday? Because it came in my DCBS box, and I enjoyed it so much that I wanted to get it, the trade of it, and I popped it open and found myself rereading the whole thing and reread it in one sitting again. Is the 6-issue Starlight from Image that Miller and Gordon Parlov did.
I was waiting for you to bring that up again.
You know, the Flash Gordon-y old gunslinger picks up his guns and has to go out and fight the bad guys one more. And it's Shame. It's Shane. Shame was the old Batman 66 version of Shane. But, you know, it's all these classic gunfighter type and Flash Gordon homage, really enjoyable, and Parlov's art is great. It's a nice self-contained story, and it's one of those comics that I would give to anyone who was interested in a comic book but only thought that they knew, you know, some capes and cowls kind of a thing, that it's one I'm definitely bought with the purpose of being able to pass it around to people and have them check it out. Really good.
Well, when it's a movie, everyone will know it soon enough.
Yeah, right.
Did anyone see his other... Didn't he have a movie come out recently?
Yeah, The Kingsman.
Yeah, is that any good? Do you guys know or hear any buzz?
I heard some comic people I know liked it, but I haven't seen it. That type of thing, I'll just wait till it's on TV or whatever. Yeah,
I like The Kingsman.
I'm sure it'll be fun, but I don't... I go to the movies, but it's got to be something that feels like this is something I need to see in a movie theater.
Yeah, Blade Runner, I needed to see that in theater.
A few times, just to see Daryl Hannah do her backflips.
And there's like you're like, oh yeah, okay, they got their nudity requirement for a movie in the 80s.
I'd love the 80s.
You guys got a choice from Long Beach Expo yesterday. Do you want Skies of Fire or Protégé?
Skies of Fire.
Skies of Fire is an oversized international effort. I was talking to the creators, and they met at school in London, so they're all from all over the world, and they work together on the book. And I was like, that's pretty cool that, you know, you guys are friends. And Vincenzo Ferrero, United Kingdom, Ray Chu, United States, Brian Valenza, Indonesia, the colorist, Nick Shaw, letterer, Rudolfo Reyes, variant cover artist, Mexico. Pablo Pepino, lead artist, inker, Argentina. And Joseph Vandel, cartographer, graphic design, Germany. The first two were the co-founders. So it's this sort of, like I said, it's an oversized book in color. And it's basically, it's a whole separate sort of steampunky world. Like the opening has this map of the Aquilinian Empire. And it looks sort of kind of like a UK-type thing, except it's bigger in relationship to the European mass, but it's like a peninsula. So there's a big... And it's got all the different seas and lands. And I like those kind of maps when they really take their time to create a whole world. And basically, it's these big airships. And in the course of delivering the airship, they're raided by pirates. And the pirates destroy, and one of the local captains wants to go after them, but they go into this, what they call the Expanse, which is a no-go zone. And then the captain gets called back to the capital and gets reamed out because they're not supposed to enter the Expanse. And then it's all the advisors of the king saying that they need to just ream out the captain. And the king's like, well, I should, but, you know, we need to stop these stupid bandits because it's destabilizing the economy. And then he gives her the permission to take her team wherever she can. And then the back has like a fake old-timey newspaper, you know, kind of set like you'd think at the turn of the last century with like ads and stuff. Almost like, remember League of Extraordinary Gentlemen did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a little text piece and like a letter that looks like it's to the government. Like just a really nice package overall. And this is the first issue. And like I said, it sort of sets up the story. The only thing I might knock a little bit of is maybe I'd like to push the story forward a little, but that seems kind of a churlish argument. considering for $5 I got a ton of content. Like, it's really tough to be too petty about it. But I'm totally, like, if I see the next one when they're next to the show, I'm definitely going to pick up two because I like the sort of excitement to it. I'll, like the other one, I'll try and scan it to it, but it does have kind of a Euro feel to it all, kind of a little bit. Like, I definitely get the feeling some of it's reference, but not where they scanned in the reference type of thing, but where they just looked at it really hard and that type of reference, you know what I mean? Which I don't mind as much, but there might have been some where they sort of shaded over it. But I think it works well. You know, the action's pretty well delineated. There's a little bit of confusion for me in the firefight. That's these giant, like, dirigibles with cannons and everything. So there's a little bit about, you know, because you don't know who the pirates are versus the cargo versus the, you know, official representatives of the government. But, you know, like I said, these seem really petty by any standards to be knocking the book at it. And it's Skies of Fire. And I don't, it's called Mythopoeia, I guess, is their publisher, but I don't know. I think it's those guys publishing it, you know what I mean? But the oversize really catches your eye when you're at these conventions, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And also the back cover isn't kablam, which is weird.
All right, that's another episode of Indie Comic Book Noise. We'll be back again sometime.
Next week.
We'll see if you can pull that off.
Let's see if Phil, you know, answers the emails on time.
Hey, when you guys start going off in Thunderbolt shit, I'm out. I just blank out.
You can find us over on Marvel Noise doing the Marvel thing. You can check out our Indie Comic Book Noise Facebook page and like it and comment and see some of the art we post there. And you can bug us all on Twitter, either at the Indie Comic Book N Twitter address, or all of our various Twitter addresses are on the Facebook page right up at the top where you can easily find it.
Yeah, so like our page.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining me again.
And us.
No, I meant you guys joining me.
Oh, okay then.
Oh yeah.
You're welcome.
Thanking the listener. Thanks, listener. Or listeners, I should say.
All right. Later, gang.